R&B Media, Philadelphia. Philly's R&B Station, 100.3 WRMB.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
This program has been paid for by my Philly lawyer.
Good morning. Court radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host of Court Radio, every Saturday morning right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
And YouTube.
Yes.
For the rest of the world. Good morning, YouTube. Good morning, radio listeners. We're here. We're live. And this is going to be an interesting show. I want to start the show off with a topic that just absolutely shocked me to my core. Now, it takes a lot in this world to shock me.
Yeah, you've been around.
I don't know if it's just me. Maybe it is. I have to ask the listeners, and I have to ask YouTube and you guys. And I'll be guided by what you think about this. Okay? Right. Here we go. I had a client retain the firm this week. That client was previously represented on this case. I mean, it's only a couple week old case, but had been represented by Morgan and Morgan.
Ooh.
And for whatever reason, I don't recall that they came to a loggerhead with Morgan and Morgan and said, we're not dealing with you. And then they reached out to my firm and we requested, as is customary, because Morgan and Morgan had requested reimbursement of costs on the file. So they had spent some money. And when you move from one attorney to another, the receiving attorney is responsible for the costs of the prior attorney. And depending on how much time they spent on the file, in this instance, it was there was really virtually no time.
Yeah, because if they rejected it, how are they spending time on something?
No, they didn't reject. The client got rid of Morgan & Morgan.
Oh.
Yes, I'm sorry if that wasn't clear.
All right.
Client said, we don't want you.
Mm.
And then they came over to our office.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So,
but they have to be made whole.
The client has an obligation to make them whole. The receiving attorney, oftentimes when you leave one attorney and go to another, they'll work some arrangement out. Again, if the prior attorneys had spent a long time working on the file, they may get a piece of the fee as well. Mm-hmm. They're certainly going to get their costs reimbursed. This is standard fare. Okay, so I want to make sure that they were actually represented. There was a lot of cost for a very short period of time. And I wanted to make sure they were represented by Morgan & Morgan legally. So I asked Morgan & Morgan to send me their fee agreement between them and this client. Now, they sent the fee agreement, and this is where the shock comes in. There is a clause in their fee agreement that says, if we, Morgan & Morgan, commit malpractice, you, client, if you sign this agreement, agree that you will not sue us for our malpractice, but you will merely raise a claim for that in a private arbitration. This is called an arbitration clause. Now, the shocking part is that we, as plaintiff's attorneys, always advise our clients, be careful and don't sign agreements that contain arbitration clauses. You commonly see these now in the medical malpractice arena. Hospitals will have you sign it if when you're getting admitted. Nursing homes will have folks sign it. And that way, if the nursing home commits negligence, malpractice, you can't bring them to court where it is most advantageous for an injured party to be. You know, if you're in an arbitration scenario, you have a lot less power than you would in a courtroom. And so we often tell our clients, do not be careful, do not sign. But here, the actual plaintiff's attorney contained within the legalese of their fee agreement says you can't sue us if we've committed malpractice. And again, maybe nobody else finds that to be shocking. I find that to be shocking. And I find that to be, ironic that here we are telling our clients don't sign these agreements, and he's snuck that in to the fee agreement. Oh, maybe I'm being overly dramatic when I say snuck it in. It's right there in plain view. The client has to read it and sign it, and they did.
But that's the thing. These agreements, and I've seen, have dealt with these agreements. They're so long and arduous that, you're not able to really get those agreements read and understand it. And you just don't have the time as the client to read every little bit of everything. It is
a lot.
It's a lot.
Especially these days.
Oh, we got a voice here that's trying to jump into this conversation.
Who
wait
that,
a minute. You can't just speak. I have to introduce you.
You can't just speak.
and I don't know if you've been on since we've gone to the tube. But you're actually, there's your camera right there in front of you.
Yeah,
right there.
Is.
It's right there. And you are on the camera.
I'm on Front Street,
right?
Man.
This is the one, the only, Saul L. Langsam. The Langsam of Silver's Langsam and Weitzman.
Thank you.
All right. Now you can talk.
No, so the thought was this. The thought is if a document is overbearing, and in most instances, the significance of that particular language is not called to the attention of the client. What Morgan & Morgan should have done is put a little box right next to that statement that has to be initialed.
Yes, I agree with you 100%.
And otherwise, I think the client is in fairly good standing to say, look, I'm not a sophisticated person. This was not reviewed with me. I had no idea.
You have to retain an attorney to review the contract you signed with your attorney.
Sadly, Morgan & Morgan does not have the best reputation in the city of Philadelphia. And even in my dealings with them, we have found that they'll go and retain a client, and before they even do their due diligence, they have filed a lawsuit and become counsel of record.
That's their new play. They were probably getting tossed out of so many cases that they couldn't make a claim for anything, that the second you become a client, they file a lawsuit. The second you become a client, they're filing lawsuits. Maybe not against the right parties, or not all of the parties. Who knows? But they're putting it. They're locking you down with a lawsuit pretty quickly. But again, I find it shocking. I don't know if our listeners do, but if you do, I want to hear from you because. Oftentimes, I think things are important that other people don't. But in this instance, if they've committed malpractice, you've locked yourself out of the courtroom. You've locked yourself out of the courthouse. You've told them and the world that you'll do this privately, quietly. You'll find some arbitrator who will hear the case, but really won't have the power of the court. And to me, entering into such an agreement with your own attorney is incredible.
I see a class action coming down the pike.
That could happen.
Wow.
I don't know about that, but we'll see. All right. Anyway, enough of that. I may do a whole show on that because, again, that's a really important thing. Folks are entering into these agreements with Morgan & Morgan, but they're entering into them with the Einsteins and the Jeffersons and the local nursing homes. And everybody, all these corporate entities are trying their hardest to prevent you from bringing them to the bar of the court if you should have a dispute with them. And it's
because they're skirting accountability.
Most definitely, they are skirting the full accountability that the law brings when you have a court case. All right. Saul Langsam is here, folks. And you know, if you've ever watched or listened to Court Radio, when he's here, we're talking about wills, estates, trusts, and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Saul, how's business been? It seems like there isn't a week that goes by where we don't have not one, but several of these kinds of inquiries from potential clients calling our firm.
We do. I mean, I think it's a topic that is personal to most people. And at the end of the day, when a client anticipates a windfall, they want to know how to get it and what all their rights are. So the interesting thing, there was a couple calls that came in this past week, and the caller presented this to me. They said, Mr. Langsam, I'm living in my grandmother's house. I would like to have the property transferred into my name. To which I say, that's fine. Let's arrange to bring grandmother into the office, and I'll do the necessary paperwork, and then we'll transfer ownership of the house into your name. Oh, grandmother died 30 years ago.
Okay.
Now, this is not an isolated case. I am getting these calls, and the reality.
I wonder what caused them to wake up 30 years later,
and say,
I think it's time I deal with this.
I ask that question, I never get an answer. So I explained to them that we now have to create a family tree in order to determine how many children grandmother had, and how many of those children are alive, and how many of those children have children of their own.
I presume this family tree you're creating is going back to the moment after grandmom died 30 years ago.
That's exactly right.
Isn't who's alive today, but it was who was alive on the day grandmom died, and then if some of her, let's just say that she had no spouse. Let's make this easy. She had no spouse, but she had several children, and 30 years ago. And then one or several of those children passed away, but they had children. And then maybe some of those children passed away, the grandchildren, but they had children.
You're hitting the nail right on the head.
Oh, my Lord.
In an attempt to educate the caller, I ask these questions. You know, are there aunts and uncles in the picture? Do you have cousins in the picture? And in most instances, there are a numerous collection of people. So the one matter that's in the office now that's probably going on 3 years old is a nephew that came to us involving his aunt's estate, and the nephew wanted ownership of the aunt's house and claimed to be in communication with the other 11 cousins, and everybody was on board. Everybody was going to sign off their interest on a deed. Well, that never happened in my lifetime. And to this day, years later, I'm still waiting for him to bring those signatures back to the office so that we can do a deed from the estate and all of these cousins into his name only. The reality is that once somebody learns that their signature on a deed is worth a couple dollars, they're not giving it to you for free. And I try to tell these people, in the real world we live in, they may not even know that they have an ownership interest or there's been an inheritance through a parent. But once they look into it, and they realize, oh, here's a property that's worth $200,000, and I have a 10% ownership interest in that property. I'm not giving you my signature for free. Let's come to some agreement on a value. You pay me, I'll sign the deed.
Manuel, have you ever been left any property?
Never.
No family that passed away that owned anything of any value?
The answer is no.
Eric?
The answer is also no.
Yeah. Me as well.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Me as well.
But suffice it to say, you two gentlemen will leave something.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Unless I use it all up before then.
No, stop.
Hey, so, you, Manuel, you raise an interesting point. And this, I read this article, and it was intriguing to me. The article focused on the amount of wealth to be inherited by adult children from baby boomers. I'm the baby boomer generation. That number is $53 billion. Now, that may not make any sense. The value of inheritance going to my next generation is anticipated to be $53 billion. The number is staggering. Mm. But there's a greater need for estate planning when you're talking numbers like that.
Talk to the right guy.
And you've got to do your homework. And estate planning is not the product of how much you have. It has to do with controlling who gets what, whether you're worth $10,000 or you're worth $10 million. It's important to control who gets it. And if you don't put it in writing and your eyes are closed, nobody's going to read your mind.
I want to just make one correction. You misspoke with your B's and T's. It's $72 trillion.
I was going to say $53 trillion.
Yeah, no.
You're saying 72?
72 trillion.
That's a heck of a lot of money.
Yeah.
Baby boomers have left that much?
Some people are billionaires these days, right?
Some of them.
But the baby boomer generation came from a real strong work ethic.
Right?
We didn't have AI. They had to get their hands dirty.
Encyclopedias and library cards mattered.
God's sake.
They did, man.
Yeah, yeah. I still owe, I think, a library book.
No, you don't. Those things would haunt you. You know that.
You'd be scared to go back, over to life. How much? Oh.
That was a real concern, man.
It was. $72 trillion is being passed on. How do you pass it on? You get a will.
Mm-hmm.
Needs a will, Saul?
Well, you pass it on in many different ways. When you're dealing with that magnitude of dollars and cents, each generation really has to do some sophisticated estate planning so that the receiving generation intelligently manages those funds.
The baby boomers are giving it to who? Is it the millennials? Who?
No, they're adult children.
That would be who?
Generation X.
Is that X?
Gen X.
So X receiveth how much?
$72 trillion.
Trillion. Okay, X.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And let's see how long it lasts them. Line two. Line two, we got Anonymous. Good morning, Anonymous.
Back.
Good morning, everybody.
What's your...
I'm hoping everybody has... Well, I hope you have a good Saturday. I was in with Saul a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
I'm having such a dispute with my family, and I changed the executor of my estate about 2 weeks ago with him. I have had another change I need to make, and I need to know, would he charge me the same fee?
Oh. If you have persevered to stay on the radio show today, it will not increase. I don't know what it was, but it will not increase.
What? Why is it that so many changes are happening? What's going on? I mean, you're anonymous. You can share with us.
Saul knows who she is.
Yeah, he knows. I was the lady who was lost for 20 minutes. my children, I'm having a dispute with them. And what I thought I was doing last week or week before is not what I want to do. I want to leave one child as the executor and in charge of everything.
Ah, so you're going
to...
That must make sense because, you know, if one person is in charge, you can't... There's not going to be a dispute because they're going to make the decisions, and you need to pick the person you think is best capable of making those fair decisions on your behalf.
I did. I made her the executor of the estate. I switched.
Okay.
From one child to another.
Uh-huh.
But I know this particular child, if I don't disperse it equally among the three, I know she will do the right thing.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we're going to see you back in the office this week.
Yes, we will. Yeah. I'll have to call Saul to make an appointment, but I don't have the funds right now. That's the problem.
Oh. It's not a problem. Give me a call. We'll figure it out.
That's the kind of guy he is. That's the kind of guy he is.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great Saturday.
Yes, I had a Wednesday appointment at 11 o'clock. He can look me up.
He said he could tell by the sound of your voice who you are.
He knows.
He knows.
He said that the last time I sound so sexy. Okay.
Oh, she's going to get him in trouble now. all right. Have a great Saturday.
Thank you so much. You guys have a complete great Saturday as well.
You too.
Bye, Saul.
Bye-bye now.
215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. Yeah. If you've got a legal issue or question, now's the time to give us a call. If you want to jump in on my Morgan & Morgan rant this morning, the number to call is 215-227-2727. So, wills?
Wills and estates. So, we talked briefly in the office about the significance of will contests.
Yes.
Which is an interesting topic. That's a situation where multiple wills are being presented to the courts. The most famous of these cases by far was a case involving the recluse billionaire Howard Hughes,
yes,
who owned TWA, if I'm not mistaken, among
the first airline I traveled on.
Yeah. Trans World Airlines.
Took it to Miami. They actually had stewardesses at the time, not men, stewardesses, and they had you know, outfits that they were wearing. And
hi, I'm Jackie.
Yeah.
Fly me.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
And then there was the guy sitting next to you smoking a cigarette, you know.
On the plane.
In the smoking section. So what happened when Howard Hughes passed away, there were 22 wills presented to the court as the last will.
Wow.
22. The court litigated the issue of which, in fact, is the last legitimate will in time. It took the court 1 year to rule out 21 of those wills.
That's pretty good, actually.
In order to determine which, in fact, was the real will. And it was a will that was presented by some family members and some of his business people. And that's the will that did, in fact, get probated and whatever happened thereafter.
Let me explain to folks that under those circumstances, you better have some cash. You better have some money because this, like, I think that a lot of people get this notion that lawyers work on contingent fees for everything. And that's not right. That's not the way it is. I do a contingent fee, which means that I get paid if you get paid, on personal injury matters only. Hard stop. So if you're involved in a medical malpractice claim, an automobile accident, a slip and fall, you can retain the services of a really good attorney like myself for nothing up front. You sign a percentage of your case to me, and if we're successful, I take that percentage, and if we're not, oh well. Hasn't happened, but, you know, oh well. If you retain an attorney for almost any other reason, including a will contest, there's a retainer to be paid, there's an hourly fee, there are costs, and one of the costs for this type of litigation would be maybe a handwriting expert. Mm. So you're bringing a handwriting expert in. You get copies of what you know to be the true handwriting of the decedent, and you compare that against the signatures on these various documents. an expert like that may cost, again, depending on how extensive the work is to do and how many things he needs to analyze, you know, nowadays it could be $10,000 or more dollars to retain the expert. You've retained the expert. You've retained the attorney. You're getting charged by the hour. You may have depositions where the parties come into my office and are questioned under oath, where there's a court reporter, a stenographer who's taking down the testimony. All of these people are charging money, and all of this money is borne by the litigants up front. So if this will contest doesn't involve substantial assets, like if you expect to get, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 out of this process when it's all over, it's not a process that you can afford to litigate. It's going to cost you more to litigate the process than it would be for what you're going to receive from it. Folks don't understand that. That pisses people off because it's like, wait a minute. He owes me 15 and I can't get the 15 unless I spend 30? Yep. That's what I'm telling you. Yep. So,
I mean, the other common threat.
And you have some of these cases. Yep. I mean, I see Robert and you working on these cases. It drives me crazy. Are you getting paid for them?
Of course we are.
Oh, okay.
So the other common thread in these will contests is undue influence. Okay. So if you have a properly executed will, and another family member presents a later will in time, and there's some suspicion that either that later will was executed when the author lacked the capacity or was unduly influenced, that's the subject matter of a will contest. Once again, where the assets justify that type of an effort, but in an undue influence case or in a lack of mental capacity case, you have to bring the doctors in to convince the judge that this person did not have the necessary faculties to understand the significance of reading a will or signing a will. And that's expensive.
I can only go back. I've only had one case in my career that I actually litigated a will contest. It was in Montgomery County, and it involved about a $400,000 estate back in the 90s when that actually meant something. And I'm going to tell you what that was all about when we come back from this quick break. Folks, we got to get the bills paid. We got a 2-minute break. We'll be right back, but if you've got a legal issue or question, 215-227-2727. We're in the house with Saul Langsam talking about wills and estates. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, my Philly lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact? With over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Back. Maybe that clause would be not upheld. So, okay.
He's answering a question from YouTube. So,
yeah,
you know, if you're online, guys, you know, we will answer your question.
That's, yeah. So. Man, we got a lot of questions here, Saul. And let me jump to Natasha on line one, Eric, because this actually deals with exactly what you were talking about before we went on break. Natasha, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question or issue?
My issue is, it's kind of complicated, but not. My daughter's father is the only child that he has. However, there is someone who my daughter's father had a relationship with years and years and years ago. Anyway, my daughter's father, with the dementia that he has been to a lawyer with the person who is not biologically his son. With that being said, I know that there is, I'm not exactly sure what he did. I don't know if he got power of attorney, if he, you know, got him to get a will. I'm not sure. And then when I talked to my daughter's father, he says he doesn't know what he signed.
Okay. So
I'm just so frustrated.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, getting back to what we were talking about before break, when that is that, you know, all these things are paid for by clients who want to litigate these issues. Yeah, this is something that could be litigated. You could find out what lawyer the your daughter's dad went to, and you could subpoena, again, if you brought your daughter's father to the bar of the court to have him declared incompetent and you appointed as his guardian or your daughter appointed as his guardian, that's a way to get this dispute before the bar of the court and have subpoena power and get the, you know, whatever documents he signed. And but then I'm always going to ask the client when everything comes, you know, to the bottom line here, what's at stake? How much money does this guy have, and how much are you afraid somebody else might steal from you or your daughter?
I don't know a financial figure, and my biggest concern is that this person is going to try to take everything from my daughter, and he does not have right to do so.
Well, you can always
the financial part of it.
Well, but that's the key.
Yeah,
that the financial part is the part that you need to get an answer to, because it determines everything else. If your daughter's dad had an estate worth, you know, $8,000, then it's not a fight you're going to fight. And because it's just there's not enough ingredients to bake a cake with that,
and it's going to cost more to
far more
than what.
If on the other hand, your daughter's father has an estate worth, you know, $800,000, that's an easy one. You're going to fight that. You're going to find the funds to fight it, and you're going to dispute whatever documents that the non-biological person is trying to take. Because if you have those documents set aside under intestacy, right? If there is no will, if there is no documents, then under intestacy, and what is intestacy, Saul?
That's when you pass away without leaving a written document, nor your wishes, called a will or a trust or a multitude of other documents.
And the law then determines who gets what. And if your daughter is the only biological child of this gentleman, then she gets everything. So if you set aside these documents, which you believe were signed while he did not have the mental capacity to sign it, then she gets everything. But again, if there's not enough involved to fight, if there's not homes worth money without mortgages, then it's probably, unfortunately, something somebody gets away with, so to speak, because there's just simply not enough worth fighting over. Because you're going to have to invest your hard-earned dollars to contest those documents.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Natasha.
The first step that I need to take.
Yeah.
Can I ask one question? The first step that I need to take is to find out if there is a will.
No, the first thing I think he's saying you need to take is that you need to find out the value, you know, that you're fighting for.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I know it's more than $8,000. There's a house. There's, you know, his savings and, you know, other, you know, things like that. So, I mean, I think it's worth it. And, you know, just in principle.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, principle.
Principle costs money. But what, let me ask you this. You've come to this conclusion somehow that he suffers with dementia and he's not capable of entering into a legally binding agreement. I don't even know if that's a true statement. I mean, that's usually a statement that you need to rely upon a medical professional in order to make that statement.
That's been done.
Okay, so he does suffer with dementia, and he is not competent currently, correct?
Correct.
But that doesn't – the incompetency has to coincide with the execution of the document.
Right. He has to have been declared incompetent on the day he signed the documents you fear he may have signed.
Or before, right?
Or before. Yeah. His incompetence has to –
Or before.
Well, his incompetence has to coincide with the signing of the document. He has to have been incompetent on that day.
Right.
Sometimes that's hard to prove. Right. You might be able to prove he's incompetent today, but maybe 6 months ago he was competent on the day he signed them. That's why it gets very tricky and expensive to kind of date his incompetence to a very specific period in time. A lot will have to do with what medications he was on at the time, what the doctor's records said at that time. That requires you to get those records. In order to get those records, you need the subpoena power of the court. It gets complicated and expensive.
Okay.
Thank you, Natasha.
Right. Some of these things I already have in order. Thank you so much. That was helpful.
Take care, dear.
We have there's a problem that threads through the estate administration process in the city.
What is it?
And the problem is this, that the vast majority of inner city estates are cash poor. So when a parent dies, they own a home. There's no money in the bank. Family members rightfully are entitled to that house. They want the property either in their name or they want the opportunity to be able to sell the real estate. The only way you're going to do that is to open a mother's estate or a father's estate, whoever's the record owner of the property. If the estates are cash poor, somebody has got to put their hand in their pocket and come up with probate fees, which are paid to the city of Philadelphia based on the value of the estate.
What would they be about?
I'm going to tell you. Legal fees, and inheritance taxes. So the thing is, this is what you're looking at. You're looking at three sets of expenses that somebody's going to have to pay in order to get the estate open. Inheritance tax, probate fees – are based on the value of the estate. So if the estate consists of a $200,000 house and nothing else, you're probably looking at a probate fee between $400 and $500. That's not going to break the bank. But you got to come up with the retainer for our office, because whether
that might break the bank.
No, it usually doesn't. But if you don't, if the estate is cash poor, nobody wants to put their hand in their pocket. So listen, whether the estate is worth $10,000 or whether the estate is worth $10 million, the legal work is exactly the same. We got to do the same documents, file the same petition, file the same REV 1500, and all of the closing documents for the estate. So people say, I've got this house worth $200,000. How do I sell it? Come up with the funds.
How much? About. Give me a ballpark.
I would say, depending on what the family wants to do, if their intention is to sell the property, then they probably will have to come up with $3,500.
All right, that's not the end of the world.
No,
but not if you're coming into a property worth $200,000. You have to invest a little in this.
But if some family member decides they're going to hold on to the property, now you don't have a source of income being generated from the sale of that property down the road.
Right.
And family members have to put their hands in their pocket. That is a difficult exercise.
Let's go to line four. Another anonymous. Anonymous, good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. My father has just passed away. He was estranged from his mother. Through Ancestry.com, I was able to identify that my grandmother and my aunt owned a home in South Philly. I'm just learning, like, all of these things. My aunt never had any children, and my grandmother only had one son. What is, based on the estate conversation that you're having now, what are the steps that I should take to identify and potentially obtain ownership of the property in South Philly?
First thing you have to do is figure out the order of who passed away, so we can figure out, under the intestate statute, who inherited what, assuming there are no wills that control that. So once you figure out who passed first, then you can kind of collect your thoughts to see what, if anything, the surviving family member is entitled to under the statute.
Who's in that property in South Philly today? Do you know?
And I believe that my aunt passed first. She was the older sister, and my grandmother lived in the house, and then she passed away.
And who's in it now?
I have no idea. But this has all been since perhaps a week ago that I'm finding all of this out. And so I'm driving and listening to the conversation and thought how apropos, let me call in and ask a question. So I don't know any of that.
Yeah.
I'm starting the process now and just wondering, you know, what should those steps be and what should I do?
Well, yeah, I think Saul nailed it on the head. You want to kind of lay out a family tree, see who passed when, who was still alive at the time, and that'll tell you whether there are any other heirs besides yourself, maybe some who have a priority over you or maybe the same priority, in which case you may be sharing it. And then once you know that, then you got to figure out who's in that property. If it's abandoned, is there anybody in it? And if there are people in it, what's their claim to it, if anything? And, you know, we would probably give you a budget at some point and let you know what it's going to take for you to invest some legal expenses and money to accomplish what you want, if it's even possible. Get your family tree together. Give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727, and ask for Saul Langsam.
Okay. In a scenario where it's laid out the way that I've said, my aunt passed first, my grandmother was there, would I go to in preparing for my conversation and meeting with you, would I go to City Hall to find out who owns the property or what that status is? Is that
Yeah, you don't even have to go to City Hall. You might be able to find that out online.
You can easily find it out online, but if you want a copy of the deed, just go over to room 154 City Hall. They'll print you a copy of the deed. People don't realize that deeds are public documents and anybody can get anybody else's deed. City Hall will charge you $2 a page. Your typical deed is 4 pages. $8, you'll have the document in your possession because that'll give us a lot of information.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that I can go online. Where should I go? Like, to the city of Philadelphia?
You can go to it's a property.phila.gov.
The man with a very deep knowledge set on everything wills and estates, the one and only Saul L. Langsam. Anonymous, take care. We look forward to your call later in the week. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Let's talk to Sherelle. Is it Sherelle Parker?
Parker?
Yeah, I think so. Line two, please. Ms. Parker, welcome to Court Radio.
I don't know about that.
She might.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if I'm on. So this is not Sherelle Parker. It's actually Cheryl. Good morning.
Good morning,
Sal and Dean. I'm going to turn my radio down a little bit. So I have a question. I've been listening to you guys, and I've done a little bit of my own research. I had the same situation. Grandmother had a house, passed away, had 3 sons. Only son with children was myself, my father. So when we attempted to probate grandmother's property, my brother and I had a half-sister who lives in another state. So we told the court that we had this half-sister, and so they said that she would have to renunciate along with the brother. And I, if that's who they chose, would become the executor. So the sister refused to renunciate. Fast forward 5 or 6 years later, property still in grandmother's name. Possibly, though, with all of the fraud with title switching, may no longer be in her name. Okay, try to follow me now. Now, second son, who had no children, has since passed away. So as I go to try to attempt to probate his few assets, which I don't know if the property is still his asset, but I do know he had money in banks and things like that. So when I go to try to probate, they tell me I have to do that whole renunciation step again. So question one, can I not identify that there's a half-sister? How would they know? And question two, if I renunciate, does it automatically bring up his assets, or do I have to indicate that his mother had a property that could or could not be probated at this point?
Wow, my head's going to explode.
The first thing is that any number of documents that you are required to sign will have perjury caution language in them. So if you don't reveal and you choose not to, if nobody is the wiser, then you've gotten away with something. But I had a situation where a father died, and the father had 3 children, and one of the two daughters and a son, and one of the daughters opened father's estate and totally ignored the existence of her other sister. So the estate was opened, identifying 2 children as heirs. The sister, whose name was left out, came to me, and I reached out to the other sister, and they realized that they were not going to get away with anything, so she voluntarily filed a petition to add the sister's name to the father's estate.
Yeah, sounds like the same scenario you're asking about. And so our advice and caution is, be honest with the court, because if it ever comes up, you will find yourself in a lot of hot water, and maybe even the estate will pass not to you because they feel like you lied to the court. So in any event, unfortunately, I can't get on to your second part of your question, Sherelle, not Sherelle Parker. Because
she said Cheryl.
Cheryl?
She did say Cheryl.
Cheryl. Oh,
okay. Well, then this is
incorrect.
Can I go to the court?
and say, it's been 10 years and my sister is refusing to renunciate, and I need to execute this property, whether it be sell it, whether it be whatever.
Yes, they will take that into consideration, and they may, appoint you as the better party to handle this affair. So, yes, honesty, and ask for yourself to be appointed, and that she's failed to cooperate. They'll probably schedule a hearing. She won't show up, and you'll accomplish what you want in the legal way. But unfortunately, we got to take a break. We'll be back, folks, in 2 minutes. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes, and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome back. What are you doing? I'm Dean Weitzman, your host, every Saturday morning right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
And YouTube. Good morning, YouTube. Yeah, welcome back, everybody. We've been talking to Saul Langsam about wills and estates. And it's always like a crushingly popular topic. The calls never stop. I got William on line 4. William, welcome to Court Radio. What's your issue, question, or problem?
Good morning. Just calling in reference to a will. So I have a will, and it's notarized. So I want to know, is it true that, from what I understand, as long as you have a will that designates certain persons, I have one daughter, and I left everything to her. And like, if I leave a will, even if it's written like in crayon, as long as it's notarized, is that legal and legitimate?
Okay, so William has a junkyard will, and he wants to probate that. Will it work?
There are rules and regulations pertaining to wills. If you look at the rules and regulations, the will document needs to be signed by the creator of the document in one, and has to sign the document a second time to be notarized. The will also requires two witnesses, as well as both witness signatures notarized. So in essence, you're talking about six signatures. Now, if you have the decedent's signature and you have the witness signatures, but nothing has been notarized, there are forms that need to be executed. They call them oath of subscribing witnesses. Those are people who can recognize your signature, who would sign this particular document, and it would be delivered to the Register of Wills office at the time you probate, which would allow the estate to be opened. But there are specific requirements.
So, okay, I guess I get it begs the question, what do you charge for a will? A properly executed, legally binding will.
Our office for a simple will charges $350.
Okay, so I guess the question is, why, William, would you write a will in crayon and hope it works? Because what's the consequence? If William's will is legally insufficient, like he didn't have the right witnesses and notaries, how much does it cost to probate that legally insufficient document?
Well, if it's, I mean, again, if there's only one child in the picture, then under our statute, that child is the only heir, whether there's a will or no will.
Right.
But if you have parents that don't want to leave to all their children, you put it in writing and the language of the will identify what your wishes are. But if you don't leave that will and you wish to exclude children, they're going to be included in the administration of the estate because there's no will.
So in your case, William, even if you have a legally insufficient will that is brushed aside by the court, your only daughter is going to get your estate anyway. But the more important lesson to be learned is for $350, have Saul do the will and make sure that it is tight and right and that you're going to get it probated the first time. Wouldn't you agree?
Let me just interject. So it is, I'm just speaking outside of the box. It's not written in crayon. It's drawn up by a lawyer, and it's been notarized and signed by the witnesses.
Okay.
And it designates the contents of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Inside of the property and things like that. And the other part of my question is, are the insurance company, the insurances that you can take out, saying that, you know, you can get an insurance that gives the person that you're leaving the house to, if they decide to go through probate, which it has to, or does not go through probate, which it has to, like I said, but can they get an insurance that says they get a period of time where they can decide whether to sell the property and pay off the mortgage, because there is a mortgage on the property, or they can decide to pay the mortgage, the remaining mortgage, and live in the house. Does that make any sense?
No.
If there's a mortgage, the mortgage...
You're talking about life insurance or quote-unquote mortgage insurance. Like, if you die, the mortgage will be paid off. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, it's just a different form of life insurance. And when you pass, they'll pay that. And what they do with the property is up to them. But it's going to get that life insurance policy, that mortgage insurance is going to get used to pay off your mortgage. Then they own the property free and clear. They can live there or sell it. Unfortunately, we're up against the hour. So, William, good questions. And let me, how often do you need to have your will redone?
It's a good idea to review a will every couple of years to make sure that it still accomplishes what you set out to do.
Saul, thanks for being here today. Yeah.
Welcome.
We always look forward to having you. Folks, if you've got legal issues or questions during the week and you want to talk to Saul, 215-227-2727.
The preceding was a paid program of MyPhillyLawyer.com.
The views and opinions...